let me get this straight. If the indictment is... if the indictment is, and I have seen you say this, that crossfire reduces everything, as I said in the intro, to left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left.
Stop.
Why do we have to fight?
Why do you argue?
We're in bad shape, fellas.
We need help from the media, and they're hurting us. You're doing theater when you should be doing debate.
You're listening to Under Surveillance, WLEW's biweekly show on popular culture, politics, and the relationship between mass media and public opinion. I'm your host, Kevin Fulham, and every second and fourth Wednesday mornings, I'll be joined by a series of guests as we take a look at everything from the makeup of the Supreme Court to upcoming elections and to how social and political climates impact our view of the future in film and television. Under Surveillance is broadcast on WLEW, a listener-supported community radio. And for more information or to listen to archive shows, visit www.undersurveillance.org. Today on Under Surveillance, the conclusion of a two-part discussion about the role of automobiles in popular culture. There's something uniquely American about road trip films and car chases, and last month we talked about how the genre has descended directly from that of the Western. We also looked at various iconic films and TV shows featuring cars, such as The Dukes of Hazzard and Knight Rider. We'll finish the discussion today by examining additional classic car-related films, like Weekend, Taxi Driver, and The Fast and the Furious, and also discuss why we don't see minorities or women, with the exception of the movie Thelma & Louise, featured more prominently in this genre. Returning as my guest is pop culture critic Leonard Pierce, whose writing can be found at www.ludikid.com. Part 2 of the automobile and popular culture, up next on Under Surveillance. My name is Kevin Fulham, and I'm joined today here by Leonard Pierce, and we're talking about the automobile and popular culture, all sorts of classic car-related films and television shows. I want to talk about some of your favorite films involving cars and email communication back and forth before the show. You mentioned a film called Weekend. Why don't you talk a little bit about that film?
Well, Weekend was a film that was completed in 1967 by Jean-Luc Godard. You know, people widely cite him as the father of the French New Wave movement. And it was his last, he was very productive at that time. He'd been making a ton of films, and he was very unhappy with the way that they were being received. You know, he was a very politically active guy. He was a, you know, big left-wing sort of communist at the time, actually. And he was trying to deliver his political messages in film, but he had been very successful at the start of his career. He made a lot of movies like Band of Outsiders, he made Breathless and Contempt and a lot of movies that made quite a lot of money and made him a big star in France. And so no matter how much politics he tried to inject into his films, they were received in a very respectable way by audiences. You know, they were still perceived as entertainments, and he was becoming very frustrated with that. So in 1968, when Weekend was widely released, he had decided by that point he wasn't going to make any more narrative films. His films were all going to be very avant-garde and explicitly political, that he was going to put an end to all of the narrative structure in his films. And so Weekend was going to be his last narrative film, and in fact the last frame of the film is a title card that says The End, and then it says The End of Cinema. He's saying, this is it. After me, there's no more movies. And, you know, of course that was a sort of grandiose sort of attitude that made him such a good filmmaker that, you know, I mean, it's hugely egotistical, but he could get away with that sort of thing because, you know, that ego drove him to make these films. And so Weekend was sort of his kiss off to the sort of traditional filmmaking he had been doing and that people expected out of him. And it begins, you know, the story is about a sort of middle-class couple who are trying to go to the wife's house because her father is dying and she wants to get more than her share of the inheritance. So they set out on a road trip to go to her father's house. And it's a very interesting film insofar as it's a European take on the road trip. And you don't see that very much, you know, as we discussed. It's not really a European genre. So you get a very weird sensibility of the whole car culture. And Godard interprets the car culture as being very destructive and, you know, emblematic of waste and frivolous spending and, you know, the attitude that we want to just buy things that are very expensive to keep our minds off the emptiness of our culture. And so he starts the film out with this endless tracking shot of a huge traffic jam. And the couple can't get to where they're going because, for unexplained reasons, the traffic just goes on and on and on. And like a lot of his films, it's filmed in this very beautiful, bright, vibrant colors, but the traffic jam is very bloody. You know, there's been a lot of accidents and fatalities, and so there's these, like, shocking scenes of violence interrupting the traffic jam, and, you know, people's tempers wear thin, and they start to attack each other, and there's constantly the only sound that you hear for long stretches of this unbroken tracking shot are horns honking, but you never see anyone pressing on their horn. You know, when you see them in their car, the horns are honking, but you don't see them hitting the horns. And so it takes on this very nightmarish quality, and it's just it's a very beautiful scene and very shocking as well. And it's really one of my favorite scenes involving automobiles in film history because it's so accomplished. You know, even leaving its political message aside, it's just such a technically daring shot and, you know, just so well made. It's really worth seeing.
I just thought of, in terms of traffic jams, that was the kind of the catalyst for Falling Down, which is a film with Michael Douglas that came out in the mid-90s, where Michael Douglas plays this laid-off defense worker who's caught in a traffic jam that's completely stopped, and he just winds up snapping and goes on this one-day tirade through the city of Los Angeles, and with a number of political messages involved in his rants against immigrants and different types of minorities as well too.
Yeah, a very unlikely film. You know, you never would have predicted a movie like that would have been made in the 80s, and you know, it's hard to imagine it being made today. But it caught that angry white male zeitgeist of the time it was made. You know, that sort of the sort of middle class guy who just has had it up to here with immigrants and political correctness, and you know, the sort of stifling in all these little small ways of the life he has come to expect. And it came out at the same period that Rush Limbaugh became very popular, you know, and that right wing talk radio was starting to expand, and that's the year that everyone was talking about the angry white male. And,
In 1994, and the Republicans took over Congress, and because 92, you had the year of the woman, right, with all the female political victories.
Right, and so it really happened to catch the tenor of the times in a way that you can't really imagine it happening after that, you know. But it's very much a document of its time.
You mentioned before about how in the Los Angeles area, very much a car-oriented culture, and that's reflected in the types of films that are being made. But how about cars in terms of New York City, where, you know, not many people at all even own cars, and taxis become much more critical in terms of storytelling? And you have a film like Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro in the mid-70s. Do you see that reflected in those types of films, and taxi scenes versus the LA kind of car culture?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because New York, you know, is the biggest film city in America outside of LA, and so you would think it natural that it would develop its own kind of car films, and it has, you know, but they're all taxi films. It's geographically a very different city, and as you say, you know, not a lot of people drive. And, of course, you know, everyone says that not a lot of people drive, but there's always traffic on the street, so, you know, someone's driving. But, the way that taxis develop is the taxi is it's almost always a getaway vehicle in films. It's some place that you go when you can't take the subway because you're trying to get away from someone. And, there's the image of the taxi driver as a confessional object. You know, the cab driver is the guy that you tell your troubles to, or who listens to you and identifies with you or gets angry with you. And, you also have, there's so many classic films that involve taxis that are made in New York, you know, biggest of which is Taxi Driver, you know, and that whole element of alienness and foreignness, and the movie's all about alienation and how Travis Bickle can't relate to anybody. He's just so isolated and, you know, unable to relate to people. So what does he do? He becomes a cab driver, you know, and because in New York, driving is a very alienating experience. Not a lot of people do it. It's a city that takes the subway. It's a city that walks. It's a city that takes the train. It's not a city to drive, And so it's almost natural that when you want to create in New York this figure of ultimate alienation and ultimate detachment, you're going to have him become a cab driver.
I'm also thinking of there's a famous cab scene in was it Midnight Cowboy with where the cab almost runs over Dustin Hoffman,
right?
And John Voight. There's actually a series called Taxi Cab Confessional. I'm pretty sure it was on one of those cable stations.
It's on HBO.
Okay, yeah. Where, yeah, just as you described, people will come in and you know, probably, I'm sure, halfway drunk, a lot of them, if not all the way drunk, and talk about their own personal problems.
Who takes cabs a lot is people who are drunk, you know, or people who can't get home on their own, you know. So they need somebody to help them out, and they're in a talking mood.
Yeah, and, there was Collateral, I think, as well, too, with his, like, wasn't it Tom Cruise, Jamie Foxx movie? Where Jamie Foxx plays a cab driver turned action hero, basically, is the gist of the story.
What's the biggest car TV show set in New York is Taxi.
That's right, yeah. It came out in the 70s with Danny DeVito, Tony Danza, Judd Hirsch also.
At the same time, it was on TV at the same time that one of the other biggest shows was Chips, you know, which is diametrically the opposite. It's set in L.A. and everyone drives all the time. So it shows you the different characters of the two cities.
You can't really converse while you're on a motorcycle, right? That's the big problem. I mean, you have like film like Easy Rider. I mean, the bike being even more symbol of, I think, rebel culture, outlaw culture than the car. But you don't have those kinds of either conflict or bonding sequences, I think, you know, on bikes. It's just impossible.
Yeah, it's a what it gains in the possibility of freedom and rebellion, it loses in a dramatic possibility because you can't really have too many conversations when you're riding on the back of a Harley.
Favorite action-adventure movie involving automobiles?
Oh, you know, actually, Duel is a favorite of mine. I've always really enjoyed it. You know, the film that we started out the conversation talking about, and not only because it's a really technically well-made film, actually made for television, I think, wasn't it?
Originally, it was made for television, and then it was very popular, and they converted it for a theatrical release. They actually inserted some profanity. You hear the S-bomb a couple times, and they also made some of the chases longer, so they padded it a little bit in terms of the running length as well, too.
And I think another reason that I really liked it is because it was so ambiguous. You know, not only did you never see the driver, you know, the 18-wheeler who was tormenting poor Dennis Weaver, but you never really learned why he was doing it either. You know, it was all very mysterious, and I always sort of liked that aspect of it. You know, that he had just done something somewhere to offend this truck driver, and he was going to pay for it, and he would never learn why. And there's something about that appeals to me. So that's always been a favorite of mine.
I think mine would certainly be The Road Warrior. It's the second Mad Max movie with Mel Gibson. Came out in 81, directed by George Miller. And where the film features what some people consider to be the greatest car chase, really, in film. It takes place in this post-apocalyptic type of scenario where Mel Gibson's character is trying to lead this band of civilized settlers and their precious gasoline out of their compound towards safety. And there's this huge, huge band of bikers that's trying to assault them on their exodus. And I think the last third of the movie deals with that final chase scene. It's my personal favorite.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how that plays into the whole idea, because I'm not really sure what Australia's car culture is like compared to, you know, America's or to Europe's. But I always found it really interesting that one of the more beloved, you know, car chase, you know, road pictures, that, you know, it's another one that I really enjoy. It's a favorite of mine as well, but that it came out of Australia, of all places. Yeah.
But I wonder if Australia has, you think they have some similarities to America. It's a very large country, obviously. And also, I mean, it was started by criminals, so there has to be that kind of lawless frontier type element, right, going on, at least in terms of the country's history, the backdrop.
So what's the old joke is that Australia is England's Texas, you know. It's where all the rebels and the outlaws and the people who don't fit in, you know, the kind of rednecks go to. And you know, maybe it does make sense that it came out of Australia, you know.
Your favorite road trip film, so non-action adventure, just kind of a, whether it's drama, whether it's comedy, favorite film of that genre?
You know, I would probably have to say it would be a two-way blacktop, which I discussed earlier in the film. It's just, you know, it's so stripped bare, it's so stripped down to its purest potential that I really enjoyed that one. I also liked Hitcher. You know, I thought it was very effective for what it tried to do, and it really stood the whole car chase genre on its head, you know, the way that it developed, you know, that weird hitchhiking story. I always really liked that. Detour, the film noir that we spoke about earlier, is another favorite of mine. Again, because it's so stripped down and so relentless and doesn't stop, you know, at any point. You know, they just keep piling on the poor protagonist that it's just, it's really a thrill to watch. And on a certain level, even though it represents a direction in filmmaking that I think is very bad, I always enjoyed the car chase in The Blues Brothers and the sort of road trip element of that. That they, you know, they get in a car at the beginning of the movie and they end in the same car at the end of the movie. And it, of course, was so excessive. And, you know, you ended with that big scene where a million cars are getting destroyed. And, you know, they're just wrecking up the whole scene just for the sake of doing it. And that's a bad direction in film. But the way that it was done in The Blues Brothers, I always thought was pretty enjoyable.
Yeah, Blues Brothers is one of those films I was never able to get into. I didn't see when I was younger. I mean, I just saw it, you know, recently, and it just never grabbed me. In the same way, another road trip film, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, a comedy with Steve Martin and John Candy about trying to get home on the holidays and a million different mishaps that happen. A lot of my friends love the film. I never saw it when I was younger. I saw it a couple years ago, I guess, and could never really buy into the whole story.
I didn't think of as much of it as I did, you know, The Blues Brothers, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It shared some of the same stars and the same people were behind its production. But, yeah, I mean, definitely it was a product of its time, as was The Blues Brothers, you know. I mean, I think one of the reasons it resonated a lot with me is because it was about Chicago. And I saw it about the time that I was becoming very infatuated with Chicago. And, you know, it also was one of the few big screen appearances of the original Saturday Night Live cast that wasn't terrible. you know, I probably look at it with somewhat rose-colored glasses. But I think that's the way it is with a lot of sort of light road trip films, is that they strike you because of the time that you saw them more than any inherent great quality that they have. I recently had the opportunity to watch Thelma and Louise again. And, you know, that's a film that strikes a lot of people as just a really terrific film, and especially women, because, you know, it was one of the first women's road trip movies. It was one of the first to sort of express a feminist solidarity and a feminist attitude. And, you know, it allowed women to participate in certain movie conventions that they had been excluded from. And I don't really like the film that much. I think it's not that successful. It's got a lot of really hokey elements that don't play up that well, you know, that have not really aged particularly well. But I really understand why people like it. You know, I think that it just hit home with people in a very specific way when it first came out, because it did something that not a lot of other movies had done at the time. And that's the sort of thing that you remember, even if the film isn't that great, because it's directed at you, you know. And I think that a lot of the women who saw the film at that time, they felt like it was the first movie of that sort that was ever directed at them.
Have there been significant movies since then that have featured female characters, and strictly only female characters, in other type of, you know, buddy road trip types of films?
You know, there have been a lot of female buddy pictures since then. You know, it really opened up a new vein of female action movie stars. But it didn't really do much for the road picture. The road picture has still kind of maintained its status as a sort of exclusively male provenance. It's even you know, when women would figure into the Fast and the Furious films or Gone in 60 Seconds, you know, some of the more successful recent road movies or car chase movies, the women were always there as romantic foils or sort of peripheral figures. They were never the lead figure. And, you know, I think that's partly because, for better or for worse, I would say certainly for worse, that cars are still portrayed as a very masculine piece of technology. You know, women are not expected to be good drivers. Women are not expected to know anything about mechanics. You know, women are not expected to make the kind of money that would allow them to drive big fancy cars. And so, you know, the automobile movie has really remained, with a very few exceptions, the product of a male gaze, you know, for lack of a better term.
So would it also be white male? Because I, you know, I've been trying to think of minorities in road trip types of films, and I can't think of any.
You know, it's actually curious that you would say that. I think this is maybe more of a product of the fact that Hollywood is still a white town in a lot of ways. There are not a huge amount of films directed at minorities. It's certainly much better than it used to be, but, you know, if you're casting a major motion picture that you're going to want to sell millions to everyone in the world, you know, of course you're not going to hire anybody but maybe Will Smith or
Denzel Washington, I guess, right?
To be the lead. You know, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is that the default is still a white guy plays the lead. And so, you know, that may be why that there have not been a huge amount of, you know, minority road trip films. It may also be because minorities still tend to live in urban areas rather than rural areas. So there's not, you know, how are you going to get inner city black guys out there on the road and on the freeway? But one interesting thing about it is that road movies and chase movies are huge in Mexico. In Mexican cinema, you know, road trip movies and car chase movies and car wreck movies and, you know, road thrillers of various sorts are major, major genres. So while you don't see a lot of it here in the United States, in Mexico, you know, well, of course, in Mexico, Mexicans are not a minority, but, you know, it's for that particular culture, it's a huge part of their, it's a huge part of their cinema the way that it is for whites in America.
How about in terms of Japanese film? I don't think you see the same thing either, though, right? It's
yeah, Japanese film, you know, because of the way that the country is structured, you know, it's a train culture and a
Heavily populated culture. I mean, the population density is very high.
Population density, so you don't get a lot of driving there. You know, ironically, because the auto industry is so central to their economy, but. Yeah, it's not really a driving culture, although, you know, one of the most successful anime in Japanese history, Akira, centers around a biker gang. And motorcycle culture is actually a very big part of Japanese cinema. You see a lot of biker movies there, you know, and that sort of thing. And also, very interestingly, in America, and you see a little bit of this in the Fast and the Furious films, in America, street racing is huge in the Asian community. So you get a lot of Asian Americans, especially children of recent immigrants, who are very much into street racing and into car culture and things like that. And I don't know how reflective that is of the fact that they, you know, their parents may have grown up in a place where automobiles were, you know, a luxury or just, you know, something that people didn't use very often. But, you know, Asian Americans have really embraced car culture and really embraced that. Especially in an urban sense, you know, racing culture and that sort of thing.
On that note, I think we should wrap it up here. My name is Kevin Fulham, and you've been listening to Under Surveillance on WLEW. My guest has been Leonard Pierce, and Leonard is a freelance writer and pop culture critic. We've been talking about the automobile in film and television over the last few decades, and just all sorts of iconic automobile road trip related films and various TV shows as well, too. Leonard has written for a number of publications about music and film and culture. His website can be found at www.ludikid.com. That's ludickid.com. He's also a blogger for Sadly No, which is a left-wing-leaning blog, kind of lampooning some of the right-wing sites. And anything else you're working on in particular? I know you're doing some freelance work for Metal Magazine.
I write for Metal Edge magazine.
Metal Edge, okay. And you're also the film blogger for Nerve.com, correct?
Yes, Nerve.com's film site is called The Screen Grab. It's at thescreengrab.com, and I'm a regular blogger there. And, you know, I am constantly working on other projects, so, you know, usually my website will tell you where my work can be found.
Once again, Leonard, thanks for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. It's always great to have you on.
Anytime. I always have a good time talking to you.
For Leonard Pierce, my name is Kevin Fulham, and you've been listening to Under Surveillance on WLUW. For more information or to listen to archive shows, You can visit the program's brand new website at www.undersurveillance.org. That's www.undersurveillance.org.